The programme was presented by James Nochtie and is produced by Dimphna Flynn. Next this afternoon, the poet Katrina Porteous will visit Astoria, Oregon, where each February, commercial fishermen and women gather for a festival of poems, songs and stories they have written about their lives. Tomorrow afternoon, a special edition of the Food Programme will bring you the stories behind the finalists of the BBC Food and Farming Awards. That's at 3 o'clock, and it's part of Bristol Food Connections, a city-wide celebration of all things food. Just one of the Radio 4 programmes to be recorded in front of an audience at the festival. Over the next few days, listen out for Farming Today, with a panel discussion about the provenance of food. That's tomorrow morning at 5:45. You can, of course, listen to it at a more leisurely hour online. And over the next few weeks, we'll have special editions of Poetry Please, Word of Mouth, Great Lives and Gardener's Question Time. But it all starts off with the Food and Farming Awards tomorrow afternoon at 3. This is BBC Radio 4. The poet Katrina Porteous lives in a village on the Northumberland coast where she's worked with and written about fishermen and fishing. She now reports from an unusual poetry festival very far from home.
I am Janice Marshall, and I'm from a little island in the middle of Chesapeake Bay in Maryland. It's Maryland's only offshore inhabited island. I'm so glad I got invited here. For one thing, a lot of people home will say, well, what are you going to do? What do you do? I said, I don't know what I do, but I found out I'm a fisher poet. Thank the Lord, I finally found I didn't even know what I was. So that's what I'm going to tell everybody. I'm a fisher poet.
Janice Marshall, discovering the identity of her vocation, on stage at the 17th Fisher Poets Gathering in Astoria, Oregon, a former cannery town at the mouth of the Columbia River.
But where I get my credentials from is I've lived with a waterman going on 54 years. That's where I've got my material from. Now, how I've done this, I don't know. He's the luckiest man ever lived. In Chesapeake, we call them watermen. You all call them fishermen. But they're all the same. I wrote this little poem. He was talking to his friends when I heard my husband say, "She sure is pretty and gets prettier every day. I know what to expect from her. She always stays the same. And everybody that knows me also knows me by her name. I like her when she's a little rough, just to see what she can do. She rolls and pitches from side to side just like when she was new. She's narrow in front, wide in the rear, and to think she's mine, all mine. Her shape stays the same, I know every part, and I love touching that very sleek line." After hearing all them pretty words, I was just about ready to choke. And as I turned to say, "Thank you, Bobby," he was looking at his boat.
This is Clemente's restaurant in downtown Astoria. It's the opening night of the Fisher Poets Gathering. There are about 70 people in this room, men and women, and they all have something in common. They all work in the commercial fishing industry, and they all write. They all create poetry and songs, and they're here to share that. They've come from all over the United States, from Alaska, from the Gulf of Mexico, the East Coast, and even from Hawaii. So it's a great geographical gathering of scattered people who've all got something in common and who all are sharing a real kinship of spirit.
In honor of the IRS and your federal government, who treat the fishermen of Alaska and around the world so well, this poem's called "The Tax Collector." It was April 15th, the day we all dread, and I borrowed the money to pay tax to the feds. I was grumbling and growling from my spot on the couch, and my wife says, "Go fishing, you won't be such a grouch." Still, I pissed and I moaned as I prepped gear for leaving. These taxes are killing me. I'll never get even. So I headed downwind, hoping tuna were feeding, knowing full well that to get back would be a real beating. I'll pay for it later. Like everything, when the big rod went off and line started to scream, I set the hook with the boat, forgetting my troubles, and the 9-0 went off. I was into a double. When the big reel stopped screaming, the work soon began. I was taking line back. I had him most of the way in when another great pull and suddenly slack. And I swore and I cussed as I pulled my line back. But to my surprise, there was still weight out there. Went up from the deep. Ahead it appeared. But the body was gone from what once was a brute. I'd been hit by the man in the gray flannel suit. From astern, a great shark looks at me with a laugh and says, "Your taxes are due and I'm gonna get half." But remember, St. Peter gets the ultimate price. When you get to the gates, you look back on your life. Now, for centuries, I've watched man treat my oceans quite rough, and the tax that you pay can't be enough to cover the damage you've done to my world. And with that, he was gone in a watery swirl. I was stunned and afraid when the second rod flexed. I went to the 9-0 thinking, what could be next? I landed the tuna. He was small, but he'd do to feed all my family and some friends too. And as I beat back uphill through wind, waves, and foam, I was shocked the shark's message had come so close to home. Now my wife's heard my fish stories. She'll smile and nod, but she'd never believe I met a fish god. So I kept to myself, and from then on I wouldn't dare to whine or complain about paying my share. And when searching my soul about how mankind's fell, I remember my paybacks could be heaven or hell. Thank you. Thank you.
I started this fish poetry thing. A lot of it came from my friends who were fishing and we were talking on the radio. So a lot of my poetry is about those guys. Maybe the best part for me is when my fishing friends come on the radio and say, "Rich, what are you working on today?" Right? Because I almost always have a poem going in the logbook while I'm fishing. That's probably the highlight for me, is when those guys want to hear my poetry. It's kind of my way of, in a small way, of recording who we are.
Richard King fishes off Alaska and farms in Hawaii, and where his poetry comes from and what it's about is typical of the fisher poets. It's narrative, metrical, and rhyming, an oral tradition. He's capturing the experience of a whole group of people, touching something that's bigger than all of them.
We'll get right into it. Everybody's gonna miss fish sometime. Everybody, some grabs gear in the wheel. Everybody scratched his head, wondered why the engine's dead. Everybody's at the short end of the deal.
We had an industry magazine called the Alaska Fisherman's Journal, which included not only the usual fishing news, but always some poems. Of course, fishermen all enjoyed those as well, and I thought it would be just delightful to gather a lot of my old friends I'd lost track of over the years from fishing. I've been fishing in Alaska since the 70s. And I thought we could have a reunion. And the editor of the magazine gave me his mailing list of 40 people, and I wrote 40 of them, thinking we might get a handful, and 39 said, "Sure, I'll come," and filled the wet dog the first night, astonished that there would be as many people as there were, and it went from there.
Everybody's gonna miss
the original 39 people that came, a lot of them still come. And they set the bar pretty high right from the start. We heard really thoughtful work. I believe that had something to do with the quality of what we find now. We're all pulling each other up.
Everybody's gonna miss fish sometime.
John Broderick, guitar and vocals, who made that first phone call, and Jay Speakman, harmonica, another of the key organizers of the gathering, are talking about a phenomenon that's really taken off. The Wet Dog, where it all started, is now just one bar out of at least six venues. With films, exhibitions, workshops, the gathering takes over the whole town for 3 days. This year, John's invited the most faraway fisher poet to date, me, all the way from Northumberland. there's even a visiting cowboy poet, with boots, Stetson, a big moustache, and lovely old-fashioned manners, Ron McDaniel, who's just pulled in from Sulphur Springs, Arizona.
And John's very kind. My son and I spent about a week with him setting that, and then think I earned my groceries and nothing more. But I know that no more makes me a fisherman than you riding a pony at Walmart that's plugged in makes you a cowboy.
When everybody comes back home to the loved ones that he's known, everybody's had a pretty good trip. Yeah, that's good to see you all. It's nice to be with so many loved ones tonight. Thanks very much.
This is Dave Densmore's boat, the Coldstream. And she's a combination seine netter and does all sorts of fishing tasks. She's an old boat. She's about 50 years old. And she's 54 foot long, wooden, and very, very beamy. So a really strong-looking boat. You feel as though you could trust her at sea. She's come down with Dave from Alaska for the Fisher Poets Gathering. We can hear the sea lions in the background. You can hear barking. I can just see them from where we're standing, lying out on one of the pontoons. They're lying so thick you feel as though you couldn't get another sea lion on there. They're just a mass of bodies, and they're raising their heads and barking. Now, we've just moored at the pier, a great flurry of ropes and fenders, and now there are Fisher Poets wandering along the pier and coming aboard the boat to meet up with Dave. They haven't seen him for a year, so there's great camaraderie here.
For years, I just did it for fun. And then in 85, my dad and my son drowned in Alaska on my son's 14th birthday, and that... Things went kind of black for a while. I kept fishing for a long time. I fished by myself. All the rest of the summer, I fished by myself. Wouldn't let anybody on the boat. It was probably 3-4 years before I wrote anything came at all. And then one day, three poems came at once. And so then I started writing again. It wasn't long then until I started sensing a purpose. The commercial fishermen have been demonized in the press for so long and by politicians, and the industry's dying, and we're raping the oceans and stuff, and I just got tired of it. And somebody's got to speak up for us. Somebody's got to speak up for us, and finally I decided I'm going to speak up for us. And so I started getting serious and writing kind of protest poetry about a lot of it about mismanagement by the government and the heavy-handed management were... But after a while, that started sounding kind of shrill, so I started kind of going back to writing more, trying to put a face to commercial fishermen, trying to show who we really are. It's a dangerous way to make a living, and a lot of people have died out there. So we merit a decent return for what we do. One of the things that I harp on, I try to get through in my poetry is about respect for nature and respect for the fish. Nothing wrong with harvesting. There's nothing wrong with taking the resource, but you have to have the respect for it. And if you have the right respect for it, you're not going to ravish it. You're not going to use it up. You're going to try to think about the next generation and the next generation. So I wrote this poem to kind of express my feelings for it. It's called simply For the Love of Fish. Over the rail, on the deck, gasping away your life. And I have to turn away as I see it fading from your eyes. Though I feel the pride of a successful hunter, and this is a natural order of things, the sight of you dying by my own hand a deep and lingering sadness brings. We both invested our lives to reach this point in time. This time death is yours and sorrow's mine. My crew doesn't kick or throw insolence, I won't abide. On my boat, the love of fish demands respect for those who die. And someday, when I am too old to any longer be involved in all of this, my soul will crave the fishing, but heart won't miss the killing of fish.
Okay, this is a song for the hopeless romantic in all fishermen, and for all of those of us who kiss our first salmon of the year and turn him loose. Kiss a me, kiss a me sockeye, You put a slime semi tube all up my spine. Kiss me, Sockeye. When I possess you, I'm feeling unusually fine.
Front cover of my zine, it says right on there, free to commercial fishing women, and I literally put my zines in women's hands, and I've had guys complain about that. They'd be like, really? I don't get one for free? I'm like, you're kidding me, right? There are 300 boats in this fleet. 12 of them will hire me. And you want a free zine that costs $2? God.
Mo Bowstern, probably not her original name, is a woman who fishes commercially, which in Britain would still be extremely unusual. She's one of several at the gathering. Her zine is an independently published magazine with artwork and audio.
I publish women. If people want to give me their writing, I always publish them in my zine. They go in first. I look around the room. I've definitely had experience at Fisher Poets. Like, there was a guy, I mean, he's kind of an old-timer. He would just be like, oh, I got some fishing poems, and they were just super sexist. And he'd see a woman in the audience, and he'd be like, here's one for the women. And it was about the jolly whore that all the sailors loved. It was like Sal, the sailor's pal, or whatever. And he'd look at us, and we would just be like, can't help you, buddy. Can't help you out with this. And we were emceeing, and he was performing. And I mean, I don't want to complain about other people, but definitely Aaron and I have poems and pieces that we do immediately after people like that, so that we can be like, okay, have you ever had an abortion while you've been commercial fishing? Because I have, and it's not fun. And you have to deal with all this other crap. I've read that story once, and it was gnarly.
Have you got something that you can remember out of your head that you can perform for us now?
I've got something in the back of the car.
Brilliant.
Right here, so.
Brilliant.
She was tired of meeting people, boys who were greenhorns like her, who each by each got jobs, while she stayed on hunting and hungry in the gravel pit campground. She really didn't want to give up and work in a cannery like everyone suggested. It was almost 8 a.m. Get there early, they said. Catch them in the morning. The season starts day after tomorrow. As she walked toward the transient float, she spotted the boat. A little scrappy, but it was a boat. A bearded man in blue emerged from the cabin and vaulted the rails onto the float. He headed toward the ramp and paused to yell back at the boat, then continued. Her heart quickened, and she felt a flutter of nervousness. That's him, she thought. My last chance. I gotta get this job. Okay, okay, say something. Here he comes. She waited at the top of the ramp. He barely looked at her, eyes on his truck, mind on his list. I hear you need a deckhand, she squeaked. What's that? He stopped and turned toward her, head bent in the habitual way of the engine deaf. I what? You need a deckhand? Yeah, he looked at her. You looking for a job? I can start right now. You got any experience? She knew it. A big fat no. How was she supposed to get experience? I can cook. Well, he said, can you pick up that rock? He jutted his chin toward a small boulder. She looked at him like a sheep, still hearing the imagined no thanks in her mind. What? She said, startled. Can you pick up that rock? He repeated a little louder, a little slower. He folded his arms. It was a good-sized rock, but no bigger than the sacks of coffee she lifted at the cafe job. Without shrugging out of her backpack, she squatted down, embraced the rock, and picked it up, being careful to lift with her legs, her heart, and her soul. Okay, he said, and turned around. Be at the boat 8 tomorrow. Get your rain gear and your license today. You got money for that? He was already in his truck, rolling the window down, still talking to her. Yeah, she said. Good. Don't be late. He pulled out and then stopped. What's your name? Megan, she said, still holding her rock. Okay, Peggy, he said. Welcome aboard.
I enjoy telling people about working the water, and I like talking about the women. Look, the men are out on their boats. And they're out there crabbing, oystering, fishing, doing their thing, having a good time. The women are in there with the sick, snotty-nosed young'uns, with their fevers, and, you know, just home all the time. And I always thought it was such a great thing that the men got away from it. And I always figured that's why fishermen became fishermen. You couldn't get to them any time. Come here and watch these young'uns a minute. They're gone.
When I grew up on Harker's Island, there were 4 fish houses, 7 scallop houses, and everybody lived out of the water. Now it's very, very minor, and it's become a very active battle scene between the recreational fishermen and the commercial fishermen.
One of the most amazing events at the Fisher Poets Gathering that I'm lucky enough to take part in consists of five women speaking about their lives to a packed audience. Two of them come from islands on the East Coast, Janice Marshall from Smith Island, Maryland, and Karen Amspatcher from Harkers Island, North Carolina. The experiences and difficulties of their small communities are strikingly similar to those of the fishing village where I live in Northumberland.
Local people, local working people cannot afford to live on Harkers Island. Mm-hmm. Fishermen in my community, and I think all communities, have always had to adapt to whatever the changing weather, the changing tides, the changing markets. They have been the most adaptive people of all. I think what's changed is they're no longer in charge of their own adaptation. They are pressured by economics, by regulation, by land values. You got to leave to make a living. There's just so much coming at them right now that it's only the strongest of those fishermen who can make it. A lot of our fishermen are part-timers now. They work on a dredge boat a month on, month off. They work on a state ferry system. And so how do you mix in and out of all of those occupations, but yet hold on to that core culture that defines you?
I cling to the last vestige of my heritage. Our way of life may be ceasing as well as more and more people move to the area.
Mezy Hermanson's poem, My Heritage, nails the island women's concerns in verse.
But my love of fishing burns within. It burns like a match set aflame, like a politician shifts the blame, like reality stars seek acclaim. It is something I cannot release, and so I cling to this last vestige of my heritage. I cling like barnacles cling to a ship, like rock climbers cling to a grip, like skinny jeans cling to the hip, and like dog hair clings to that polar fleece. The water provide something solid that land never can. And so, I cling.
I'm Lloyd Montgomery. I was originally Lloyd Kubkoff. My biological father, his last name was C. So I go by Lloyd William Montgomery Kubkoff C. Born and raised out of Cordova, Alaska, where I've fished since 1958.
How do you think that your background as a native Alaskan contributes to this? What are you bringing to the Poets Gathering?
The way of life as a commercial fisherman, and that's all we've ever done since time immemorial. This is my first poem in Aleut that I've ever done. It's called A Fish Jump. Akatsle, Chilahua, Minahue, Namami, Akatsle, Chilahua, Minahue. Which means a fish jumped and he jumped again and he jumped again. Where did he jump?
That sounds like a haiku to me, like an oriental poem.
But it's Aleut. It's Aleut.
We've heard some very long poems at the Fisher Poet Gathering. Oh. I like the brevity of that one.
Oh, thank you.
I've come down to the waterfront here in Astoria underneath the bridge to look at the memorial to the many people who have lost their lives in the maritime industry. Their names are inscribed here on blocks of granite. And as well as their names and occupations and sometimes the names of the boats, they've memorialized these people in verse. There are bits of poetry scattered around the memorial, telling the story of some of the disasters, including that of a ship which was lost, the lifeboat which went out to save it, which was also lost so that everyone was drowned. And it's very moving that the community is using poetry in this way, this very ancient way, in fact, to tell these stories.
There's loss being processed all the time, and an acceptance of that loss and an acceptance of the life that we're in as we're losing the fisheries, as the ocean is in trouble and we have each other. And there's writing and there's poetry.
I wasn't a writer before I first came to this. I learned in this mixing pot of talented people, all of whom I had something in common with.
I've seen guys come here with a third grade education who have attended a few Fisher Poets that have since been published and are writing poems all the time.
And I think it's happening for the younger people and the new people as well. So I think we've kind of gotten some critical mass going. So I think that seeing the quality of the work go up and people are taking themselves a little more seriously.
A lot of my poetry now is environmental, and I don't consider myself an environmentalist. Harvest everything, but do it with the idea that five generations out, people are going to want to harvest that same resource. We have to live in the rhythm of it, producing, using. And if we can find that rhythm, find that harmony, things will straighten out.
I think for Mo Bowstone, Jay Speakman, and Dave Densmore, for all the Fisher Poets, living the fishing life, responding to the sea in all its danger, beauty, and unpredictability is a kind of poetry, the oldest kind, Homeric in its origins. The Fisher Poets Gathering gives people the chance to say what working the sea means to them, to face the deepest things about being alive now in the natural world, and to bond with others who have faced the same things with a dark, redeeming wit.
You know, sometimes you can't win for trying. You couldn't find a fish, your fish were flying, and the nets and cables, they just get knotted. And the engine runs like the diesel's clotted, and nothing goes like you think it ought to. You just get bag of water. So you think you'd have died and got up to heaven, you could just get a job down to 7-Eleven.
Here's John Campbell from Rhode Island with a piece that has all the virtues that we've heard. Courage. Facing the big things in life with spirit and humor.
Well, it was wind and rain, freezing up hard. We had 3 sea robins and a 7-inch cod. We were taking out water and losing the rudder. And the dinged up prop made the whole boat shudder. We were halfway done, hauling it back when a cable let go with a thunderous crack. Took out the cook as he stood at the rail, kind of scrambled his eggs, dead as a nail. Well, we all stood around with our thumb in our butt. Had to do something, we didn't know what. Though he was looking kinda under the weather, a couple guys thought he never looked better. Well, we had fuel and ice to pay. We just steamed out yesterday. He was a real good hand and we sure would miss him. We iced him down and kept on fishing. I play a lot with an accordion player. This would be where he takes his solo. I found myself one night saying one of those things you thought you'd never say. Gee, I really miss my accordion player. Took us a while to finish that trip. Back at the dock, you know, they give us some lip, and all the coasties came down to see what was about. No one would help us at lumping them out. Said that we had no respect for the dead. Should have been glad we didn't gut them and head them. And when we went to go fishing again, don't you know, we couldn't get anyone willing to go. We had fuel and ice to pay. We just steamed out yesterday. He was a real good hand, and we sure would miss him. We iced him down and kept on fishing.
John Campbell from Rhode Island. The Fisher Poets Gathering was presented by Katrina Porteous and produced by Julian May. After the news, Mark Mardell, the BBC's North America editor, will ask if the US Republican Party can stop tearing itself apart and start to retake the country in the Party of No. Before that, to begin at the beginning.
I have a secret. I can fly.
Dylan Thomas Day. Tomorrow, over on BBC Radio 3.
I'm Ian McMillan, and I'll be helping to celebrate 100 years since the birth of the Welsh poet who brought us Undermilk Wood, Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night, and Fernhill.
I was huntsman and herdsman.
We'll all be looking back at the life and work of one of the most exciting British writers ever to take up a pen.
But for the lovers, the spirit of Wales itself.
Do not go gentle into that good night.
Dylan Thomas Day. Like the sea. Tomorrow, over on BBC Radio 3.
Rage against the dying of the light.